You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
It's time for Make the Call, a weekly discussion on the top Wisconsin sports stories of the week. You can listen to the show anytime on the free Civic Media app. Download it now on your device's app store or at civicmedia.us/app. Now, it's time for Make the Call, a Civic Media sports production.
Welcome to Make the Call on the Civic Media Radio Network. Thank you for joining us this morning. Jimmy Cuska, he's out today. I'm very sorry. You get me instead hosting Parker Olson down here at HQ in Madison, joined by the excellent Gray Gunderson. How you doing, buddy?
Good morning. Good morning, Parker. Glad to be here. We'll be back with Jimmy next week. But hey, it's not just us today. We found a little bit of a, I can't call him a substitute because he knows I'm trying to insult him when I do. But we've got a third here this week. I'm excited.
Yes.
Well, yeah.
We've got Joel Karnick. Joel, tell us about yourself. I've never met you until today. How are you doing, man?
Doing good. I've been in radio for over 40 years. I'm kind of an older version of Jimmy Cuska. I heard him talking last week about all the different sporting events that he's covered, and I've covered everything from wrestling to tick races to everything else in between, including the Vikings and the Twins. So I got a lot of sports. It's always been a passion in my life. I've got a track record of covering anything and everything. So I'm like an old Jimmy Cuska here today.
Did you say tick races?
Yeah, tick races, the Oxbow. Gray knows about those.
They're exactly what you think. Parker, Joel has basically just made me realize that I've failed to explain some of the most important things about our area up here. Literal tick races. You get them in tracks made out of PVC pipes cut in half, and then you tap on the backside of that, and you encourage them to go the other direction. And they do it with minnows, too. We do minnow races around here sometimes.
Well, that makes sense. I can envision, like, trapping a minnow, but a tick.
Well, I mean, the tick traps itself for you, so it's even easier.
I get. Is this one of those things where you can just like write on a piece of paper with the pen and the ink like scares it so it stays going in the line?
You've got the right general idea. Okay. I think it's more about kind of making a noise that urges them. So it's kind of you end up helping your opponents just as much as they help you, and it ends up a little bit cleaner because it's dirty in a different way. So it's I don't think there's a wrong way to do a tick race. If you're trying, you're probably succeeding.
And there's Lyme's testing too, by the way.
Oh, good. Okay. We're totally safe event. All right. Good. I was afraid
performance enhancing disease testing.
Right. I was afraid for a moment that we were going to need to throw out our top eight, but I think I've got the idea of tick racing now, which means that we can move on to our top eight at eight. The top eight sports stories, or not so sports stories, is what Jimmy says. I think they're still sports adjacent. It's fine with me. Number eight in our top eight stories today. Guys, I don't know if you guys have been paying a lot of attention to the baseball world. I mean, this has always been the case. Every ballpark has got its own dimensions, but especially this has come to mind kind of as the Brewers visiting the A's in Las Vegas. They're actually going over to one of the minor league ballparks over there, giving just a little hint of what their future holds in Las Vegas. I don't know if it was the field dimensions or if it was just the altitude plus the winds and the heat, but the ball was flying. We'll talk about that a little more later. But just got me thinking about stadium dimensions, field dimensions rather. What do you guys think of the fact that baseball stadiums have got such different dimensions and they can play into affecting the game so much? Gray, I'll start with you. What do you think about that?
Well, actually, I'm fascinated by this because as the outside looking in guy, you know, I'm more football than anything. Baseball, I'm trying. And as I try to get my hooks into baseball, I see this and I think, how is this allowed at all? I mean, I picture the equivalent in football, for example. You know, imagine Denver had a 98-yard field, or maybe the corner was clipped off on the northeast end, so that end zone wasn't quite a rectangle. And, you know, I even recently watched a YouTube video where there are some college or minor league stadiums that put nets up so that you can't homer in a specific area because it's so close to the infield. And it's like, what, then why'd you put a baseball diamond there? So for me, it's first of all, weird that this is allowed. And second of all, weird that so many people just accept it. So it's like, obviously baseball's existed like this in very healthy stead for a long time, but that just makes it weirder to me. It's like, how is this allowed? And changing it would be a monumental task, but still it's general confusion from Gray about this particular thing.
I agree.
I mean, if you translate what baseball does to other sports, it is ridiculous. If you think of, hey, welcome to Pfizer Forum, where tonight the baskets are only 8.5 feet high. You know, or hockey used to have this. Used to have smaller arenas, but now that they've become a little better off financially, they've been able to build new arenas that have been more standard. But I remember, wasn't it the old Boston Garden, I think, was, they always said, oh, it's a tight arena. The space behind the net isn't as big as it normally is. So it's something that did exist in some other sports. But I don't think people talk enough about, like, home run numbers, like Aaron Judge and being able to play at Yankee Stadium on a short porch in right field. I mean, that's huge. I mean, those numbers are definitely affected by where you play half of your home games.
Absolutely, and we'll talk about that more in a little bit, actually, those home run numbers. But, Gray, you brought up a point, and this brings us to number 7 at 7. Putting up a net to make sure that you can't hit a home run in a particular direction because it's so short. We have seen that a lot with banana ball, as banana ball goes to even football stadiums. I think they were at Kyle Field down at Texas A&M recently. I'm pretty sure that they've been at Clemson or Auburn pretty recently as well. Guys, banana ball, I know somebody who works here at Civic Media. I'm not going to call him out by name, Frank Gargano. He hates banana ball. And I think it's cool. It's another quick, it's a fun version of the Harlem Globetrotters, but baseball. Do you think that it's going to hang around for a long time? Joel, I'll start with you.
Well, I think, like a lot of things, the novelty of it will wear off, but I think it'll stick around. It's just the popularity of it is crazy. They sold out AmFam Field. They sold out. They're sold out for months and months. I think the whole season, in fact. So that level of popularity will obviously come down just a little bit. I just love the entertainment value of it. And I like it that baseball stops taking themselves so seriously. You know, the old rules of you don't steal second when you're up by more than 5 runs. And just those little, you know, tuxedo, straight-laced rules that baseball's always followed. Let's loosen up a little bit here, people. Let's let somebody catch a foul ball and then the batter's out. You know, I'm not saying that should be a part of baseball, but I think it's fun. I love the message behind it. It seems like the guy who runs and owns the whole thing he seems to be the real deal, and that he is creating an atmosphere for people and families that is affordable and is just an absolute hoot. So I'm all in on banana ball, entertainment value alone.
I'm with you. I'm with you right there 100% for the entertainment value. For me, as that outside looking in guy, this is, you know, I find myself watching more banana ball clips than baseball clips, but they're a gateway to each other. You know, if you like baseball, you might like banana ball and vice versa. It was actually a banana ball game I was talking about earlier when I was bringing up that net in the outfield. It was YouTube's algorithm has been infected on my account with banana ball recently. But I've been loving it because they're so fan experienced based. You know, I know Christian Yelich wants the fans to have a good time, but I know Coach Rack might climb around the top of the dugout to get into the stands and share some nachos with somebody. As far as whether it's here to stay, though, I think it is, because I've watched a couple of those videos and they're trying to put other teams in other places. They've kind of got their, I know the Harlem Globetrotters have a punching bag team that travels with them. I don't remember what they're called, but Washington Banana Ball Generals. Doesn't do that. What is it?
Washington Generals.
It is the Generals. I was thinking of the Wizards, and I was like, wrong Washington team, but I think I'm halfway there.
Well,
but
yeah, the Generals.
The Generals are going to lose. The Tailgaters might beat the Bananas. The Savannah Bananas don't win every game. And so there's a legitimacy there that, not to knock the Globetrotters, they kind of lack. You know, if the last time the Generals won, it was by accident. I think it was in the 80s. That's something that you can look up and find. And I think he got in trouble when he won that game.
Oops.
Parker, what are your thoughts on it, though? Are you a banana ball guy? Yay or nay?
I like banana ball. I think it's got its place in the sports entertainment world. I think that it needs to be careful with how big it gets. If it gets too big, I think that there's going to be almost too much of an abundance of it. And it's just, I think it's got to stay as a nice small little thing with, I don't know how many teams are at now. I think it's about 5 or 6. If they stay at this size and keep doing these tours, I think it'll thrive as it is. By the way, at American Family Field there, 2 sellouts. First time that banana ball has had sellouts at an MLB stadium without the actual bananas being there. We're going to move in now to another little story that has a lot of fan experience written all over it. Fans around the continent are going over to the World Cup. Guys, have you been watching the World Cup? I'm pretty sure that we can't afford our tickets, but we're trying to watch on TV. Are you guys watching, Gray?
I have not so far. I think I spoke to this on a morning show here recently that I kind of treat it like the Olympics, but slightly less so. And we actually spent a lot of time discussing on a morning show whether soccer might or whether it ever could jump into the country's, you know, arsenal of sports. And I generally don't think it will. Part of that is that I'm not a big soccer guy, but, you know, Messi's down there in Miami. There's a lot of money being thrown at it. So if it were successful soon, I wouldn't be surprised. But no, I haven't watched the World Cup yet. And I'd like that to change. I want to. That's about where I'm at. Joel, have you partaken yet?
To me, the World Cup is like the Olympics. If I turn on the TV and I see the USA flag in the score area, then I'll pause. I'll pause and I'll watch. But if it's Emirate versus whatever, I'm like, I got to go mow the lawn here. I got to do something else. We only have so much time for sports. And Gray and I have talked about this on our show up here many times, is that we only have so many hours in the day for sports. And I enjoy the whole concept of the World Cup. You know, it's the soccer version of the Olympics. It's pretty cool to see athletes from all around the world get together, compete, hug each other after games. That brings me joy to see that. But unless the USA is on, I'm probably going to pull out the weed whipper and probably get some work done around the house. So.
There's always better uses of our time. All right, boys, we're going to move in real quick here to number five. I don't know if you saw how many home runs got hit in the series in Las Vegas as the Brewers were taking on the A's. In game one alone, there were 11 home runs. In the whole three-game series, there were 22 home runs. Absolutely ridiculous numbers there. Guys, baseball is one of those sports. Obviously, every sport is like this, but baseball especially, you can get a pitcher's duel or you can get an absolute home run fest, a home run derby there. Which kind of game do you prefer? Joel, we'll start with you.
I'm just going to jump right into the middle of that. See, if I go to a game, I want to see an 8-7, 7-6 game. I want to see a little bit of offense. But me being a pitcher when I was younger, I want to see that pitcher have maybe 2 or 3 inning stretch where I can go get my nachos and not miss anything and stand in line for the bathroom and all that stuff. So I guess I want a combination of both, because if you have a 22 home run series or you have a 14-1 game, that probably means there's somebody on the mound that's probably just taken one for the team and just, let's just throw strikes. Don't hurt your arm. And then the game kind of becomes reduced in value. So I'll go right in the middle of that. Obviously, to go to a game and see a 1-0 game where your team loses, you feel like you got cheated out. But I feel like an 8-7 game, you get a little bit of both worlds. I'm good with that.
You do. I like a little bit of both worlds too. We've only got a little less than a minute here, so I think that we might just keep hang on. Our number three story in the top 8 at 8 is a little bit about NFL injuries this time of year. They're kind of hard to get a read on. You're not really sure how seriously you should take them. We're going to talk about that later here on the Civic Media Network as we are talking Make the Call here on the network. We're going to be talking about the Brewers. We're going to be talking about the Packers. And don't worry, later on in the show, we're going to have a little bit of Mike Clemens. But coming up next, we'll have that question about those injuries. And then we'll get into some Brewers. And then later on, we're going to be talking some rivalries. Really excited to get doing that as we move on in the show here. It's Make the Call, part of the Civic Media Network. We'll be right back after this.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Welcome back to Make the Call on Civic Media.
Welcome back to Make the Call here on the Civic Media Network. We've got Gray Gunderson and our special guest, Joel Karnick, here joining us from the Park Falls area. Boys, I hope it's nice up there. It's nice down here. We're trying to get some baseball in. I'm working for the Mallards later today. It should be fun, but we're going to get back into our top 8 at 8 here. Gray, we're saving this one for you. how concerned are you about NFL injuries? We just saw the other day, I believe it was that Luke Musgrave, he's picked up an unknown injury. That's essentially all the information that we have from the Packers in OTAs. Gray, how much are you thinking about that? How concerned are you as we move into, I mean, NFL season? It gets closer and closer by day, right?
Well, in this case, Parker, it's actually a case-by-case basis. I'm looking at this one. You know, if you told me that, you know, an offensive lineman, maybe somebody, you know, a warm body down at the bottom of the depth chart has an injury, I'm still thinking about that. Of course, it's a little bit amplified when it's a potential starter. But right now, that tight end position is a bigger thing in general than I think a lot of fans might necessarily realize. The amount of 13 personnel in the NFL last year skyrocketed, and 13 personnel just means 13 comes from one running back, three tight ends. So don't worry about that number. The thing is three tight ends. More teams are using three tight ends more often than ever before. And I'm talking like 2/3 of teams had three tight ends for half of their offensive plays. It's a ridiculous number because of the matchup issues that tight ends create and their opportunities to block. So if Luke Musgraves can't go, word is Tucker Kraft is going to be ready week one, at least according to him earlier this week. Even if that's not true, week two or three is pretty reasonable. But if the guy behind him isn't Luke Musgrave, I get a little bit concerned because you've got Josh Wiley as our third tight end. And then you hear some crickets. You got guys like Messiah Swinson, who's been on and off the practice squad. There's a couple different names out there. But one thing I can guarantee you, the Packers require tight ends who are 6'4" or taller. And so if you don't have guys like that, I don't expect them to make the depth chart. And if you look right now, behind Kraft and Musgrave is not enough. So I'm generally a little bit concerned there. As far as general concern for training camp injuries, they're the worst. They're absolutely the worst when you see those torn Achilles and such. Thankfully, the bullets have been dodged in Green Bay so far.
Joel, I'll turn it to you with a little bit of a spin on this. Do you think that there is any possibility of teams who have got this kind of an injury problem, like we're talking about with the top two tight ends with the Packers, do you think that there's any possibility of teams maybe turning to either trade or sign somebody brand new? Is that something that might be on the option as you're kind of juggling, I might have one of my top tight ends, and I'm not sure about the other one as we get into the start of the year.
And the mystery injury part is pretty funny coming from teams because they like to hide injuries. But I always think of I'm going to go with the HHR vehicles. So let's use that initial because there's three types of injuries that worry me over the years that I've seen and covered the NFL. And that number one is the head. If it's a concussion, then we got problems. We got Tua issues going on. And then we're talking about hamstring, because hamstring is something that you just can't hide a hamstring. You can't wrap it. You can't, I mean, it's takes time to heal. And the third one is the ribs. So there's your HHR, the ribs. Ribs is something too. If you got a cracked rib or something, you can't hide it. You can't play with it. So what type of injury is it? Is the big thing for me. If it's a foot injury, you know, if it's a shoulder, you know, they can find ways to wrap that up and shoot up or whatever they need to do. And usually by week 7 or 8, they can be back out there. But you know, injuries early in the season and this time of the year don't concern me a whole lot, because it was that last Super Bowl team of the Packers that had a lot of injuries early in their season. And a lot of young guys went out there, played pretty well. And then by the time you hit week 10 or 12, a lot of the guys who were supposed to be in there came back from the injuries. And then they were a pretty darn good team. So sometimes those injuries can actually be good news, because it allows some players to maybe not step on the field till week 6 or 7. Then when the playoffs come around, they might be healthier than those who played the whole season.
That could be something to keep an eye on if you're a Packer fan. Right there you go. All right, we're going to go move. We got two more right here in this segment that we're going to hit in about, we only got about 2.5 minutes to hit these ones, so we might even combine them a little. Number three in our top 8 at 8, the Brewers. They're tied for the third most wins in baseball as we talk right now today. They play in the toughest division in baseball, though. Guys, there is so much to be said about how good the NL Central is. How tough do you think it is going to be for the Brewers to get into the playoffs here? We'll go real quick here, Joel.
Well, it's going to be hard because they've had a lot of injuries lately. Obviously, their pitching staff's been decimated. It's going to be hard for them to get into the playoffs and sustain this. But what I will say is that this reminds me being a Minnesota Twins fan my whole life, this reminds me of the Twins organization where they have a great farm system and they just keep bringing guys in that you scratch your head and you just say, well, why wasn't this guy playing before? He's pretty good. And they're able to at least spell long enough when the guys are out to help him out. So Murph, he's obviously a really good coach, and he finds a way to get something out of these players for short spurts, and then the other guys come back. So I mean I like the Brewers to win the division, but I think, you know, they're gonna have to get close to 100 probably, because there's probably another team that'll be pressing them in that 90-95 win range.
There you go. The Brewers had a major league leading 97 wins last year. I believe that was a franchise record as well by a couple of games. Number two in our top eight at eight here, Tarek Skubal, ace for the Detroit Tigers. He's somebody that has been getting his name thrown around as a potential trade option, as he's only got a couple of months left in his contract. He's done after the end of this season. The Brewers are one of the teams that are being talked about getting into this. And Joel, you mentioned the farm systems. It's very possible that the Brewers make a quick trade, try to get Tarek Skubal. But Luis Lara, a guy who was being talked about being traded away, he just got a big extension. We've only got a couple 30 seconds or so here. Joel, over or under, let's go 65%. Over under 65%, the Brewers end up making a move to try to get Tarek Skubal.
I'm going to go over on that because I think when you've got a great farm system, Parker, that gives you flexibility to trade guys. You can only play, you know, 9-10 guys at a time on the field. So there's guys sitting down there in the minors who are pretty good that are expendable, that are tradable. So you've got guys to offer. So I'm going to put it at a decent chance that they've got some good prospects to give up for a player like Skubal. Yeah.
There you go. All right. That was the first seven of our top eight at eight. We're going to be right back on the Civic Media Network here with Make the Call for our number one. We're going to be talking rivalries, NFC North edition. We'll be right back.
Welcome back to Make the Call on Civic Media.
Welcome back to Make the Call here on the Civic Media Network. Hope you're enjoying your day so far. Awesome weekend of sports here. And, you know, we're in the swing of baseball season, but Gray, you know this. You can never go long without talking about football. Come on now. And we've got Joel Karnick here with us as well. And that means, because he's a Vikings fan. Yeah, sorry, guys. I know a lot of our audience is Packers. It's okay. Hold on. We're all friends. It's fine. We want to talk a little bit about rivalries here. Guys, let's kind of just go over, in within the NFC North, what is your favorite, like, historic rivalry between those guys? Gray, I'll start with you.
Well, I mean, you have to lead with the Packers-Bears rivalry. There's no real comparison to it. There are some storied and historic ones in the NFL, and I would accept arguments from other teams that theirs is the number one rivalry, but for us here, it's that Chicago Bears rivalry, especially because they've been heating up over last season, at least, if not super recently. So if the Bears build another good season on top of the last one, they are going to be enemy number one. But I would argue that both the Vikings and the Lions are positioned to really make themselves a problem. Maybe the Lions more so because they've had more recent success. My perspective, Joel, I'd like to put this in front of you. For me, about 15 years ago, the Vikings were kind of in this little brother mode. You know, they're just off the back of having Christian Ponder as the quarterback, but Adrian Peterson was there, so they'd steal a sneaky victory now and again. But then there were the kind of these doldrums of Mike Zimmer not actually getting anything done with his tenure. And so during that time, the Lions kind of came on strong with Dan Campbell. And it kind of felt to me like it was the Packers and the Lions at the top. And I know the league records would agree with that. But Joel, would you agree that we're kind of heating back up when it comes to the Vikings? It feels like they're poised to step back into their position as a primary rivalry, which it doesn't. I, as a Packers fan, haven't felt the heat from the Vikings these last couple of years, though you have gotten one over on us occasionally. Yeah. Would you say that's accurate to your Vikings fan understanding?
Well, first of all, cross the Lions off the list. They just stunk. They stunk for too long, and they're not a rivalry to anybody in the division. Tampa Bay Buccaneers in the old NFC North division probably is as much of a rival as the Lions are. But I think it depends on what part of the state you're in. Southern part of the state, it's obviously Packers Bears. But me growing up in the northern part of the state, the Bears were never a rival for the Vikings. And I think the Viking-Packer rivalry, when you get probably Stevens Point, Wausau North, the Viking-Packer rivalry is probably number one within that division just because of the proximity of all the Viking and Packer fans that all live together in northern Wisconsin, much like the Bears-Packer fans in the southern part. So I think it's regional depending on where you are, because to me, growing up a Viking fan, I never considered the Bears a rivalry. It was always the Packers. It was always, no matter what, if you won two games a year and they were both against the Packers or vice versa, that wasn't a bad year. If that was the only two wins you had.
So this raises a question for me. Do you think that the Packers are the primary rival of all three of the other teams in the NFC North? And if so, is it because they're geographically in the middle? Because, you know, think about it. You've got the Packers in the middle, the Vikings to the west, the Bears to the south, and the Lions to the east. Technically, the north, too, if you want to count the Upper Peninsula. But it's the scenario where, hey, you surround us, but you're actually locked in here with me. We're going to whoop on you guys, at least for the recent past. What if it were the Packers at the Browns level of failure? And it's like, oh yeah, it's at that point, it's three bullies, like three older brothers kicking the baby or something like that. You know, the little brother getting told. Do you think that geography has much to do with the nature of these rivalries?
I think it does. And now that I guess I've never thought about it that way, but yeah, I mean, geographically that does make a lot of sense. You know, the Packers went about a 25 year stretch from the, you know, mid 70s to early 90s of just being horrible, but yep, the rivalries still existed, whereas the Lions were horrible all the time. And those rivalries never stirred up like with a Lion Viking rivalry. The Lions Bears rivalry is kind of there. And, you know, I guess it's who you ask. Who is the Lions' number one rival? I guess it's probably the Packers, right? I would guess.
Yeah. I think so. Given that there's been locker room audio from all three of the other NFC North teams recently, where you hear things like you beat the Packers and that's your Super Bowl. Like, even Ben Johnson admitted that the Packers were the biggest game of the year, and it felt like a playoff game. And if Ben Johnson's going to come in, do everything right, and then admit something like that, it's like, wow, there really is a focus on beating the big brother. And that's exactly how I would characterize it. For I was in college in 2012. I'm thinking, you know, Adrian Peterson sneaks one out for the Vikings, and it felt like the little brother beat the big brother. It's like, man, that shouldn't have happened, and everybody knows it, and that's why it stings on this side of the river, and that's why everybody over on that side of the river was so darn happy. Parker, does that line up with your timeline? Because we're pretty close in age, relatively speaking, but you're a few years younger than me, so things are different for you.
I'm 23, so actually in my world, I'm incredibly spoiled when it comes to sports, pretty much at every level. I even grew up watching UW-Whitewater football more than I grew up watching Badger football, to be perfectly honest with you, and they were winning national titles when I was a kid, so I've been very spoiled. I've been very lucky with that. Connecting back to this, the Packers have been good. At worst, they've been decent in my entire life, right? So I think that the way I see it is that the Packers have always been the one that everyone looks up to beating, right? The King of the North for a long, long time was the Packers. The Bears, the Lions, the Vikings, I'm sorry, but all of you just wanted to beat the Packers. They had such a, they were on top of the pedestal. And now we're seeing some guys coming in and having a chance at knocking them down. The Lions, they are having their best couple of years ever in my life. It is the best couple of years that they've ever had in my life. I think that it's really interesting that you bring up that geography standpoint, though, Gray. I've never thought of it.
I never thought of it.
I never thought of it.
I never thought of it until Joel brought it up. Joel did this.
Sorry. Yeah, you're right. Yeah.
And by the way, a good run for the Lions. Give them over under 5 wins this year for the Lions. All right.
Wow. There's a take. Okay. I like it. I'm just wondering. I'm just wondering how the rivalries are going to change when the Bears move to Indiana, but that might be another discussion.
The Hammond true. Bears.
Are they still going to call them the Chicago Bears, even if they're in Indiana?
I think so, but I won't.
See, that's worth asking, though, because there are a lot of teams who don't play in their namesake cities. Even the Packers don't play in Green Bay. I think it's technically a Schwabenon, isn't it?
I believe technically. I'm not sure. I think I looked up the Lambeau Field address the other day because I was thinking the same thing. It is a Green Bay address, but there might be an exception for that field, for that building. I don't know.
Gotcha. I immediately think of the two New York teams who both play in New Jersey, though, is probably the prototypical example there. So that, and actually what I was about to say was I don't think any of them cross state lines, but they do. They absolutely do. That's the New York, New Jersey thing. And then you've got the New England argument, which just clouds all of the water. But yeah, for me, it's I think right now the primary rivalry is going to be with the Bears unless the Lions can rally. I see the Lions as kind of on a steady decline. So my pick for this year is Bears Packers with a sleeper Vikings if Kyler Murray stops doing what he's already doing and gets his head in the game and accepts that he doesn't deserve more reps in camp. Kyler Murray.
Joel, I'll spin it to you as a Vikings guy. What are the odds that we do see the Vikings snag a couple of wins against some of these NFC North rivals?
Well, the Vikings were a quarterback away last year. They still won 9 games. Their defense was really good at the end of the year, their last 6-7 games. So here's what will happen, though, with Minnesota this year. This is the doomsday opinion of a Minnesota Viking fan, all right? The quarterback position will be good. Kyler Murray, J.J. McCarthy will come out. They'll between the two of them will be a top 10 to 15 quarterback. We'll get everything we should have had last year, and then the defense is going to be porous. It's just going to fall apart. That's what my Viking fans will say that will happen this year, because the defense only gave up like one passing touchdown the last 7 games of last year. It was a great defense. If that defense sticks around and they get a little bit of quarterbacking, the rest of the teams in the NFC North for a year anyway are might be in trouble.
It'll be very interesting to be following that. Gray, we've talked earlier on in this show, not today, previously, probably about a month or so ago, when the NFL schedule finally came out, we were talking about how spread out those divisional games are. And off the top of my head, I can't think of it right now. Once we get a second here, I'll start looking into that. But Gray, we're going to see a pretty good mix of teams. I think that the Lions, they've kind of got a target on their back. No matter how good they are, they're going to have a target on their back. The Vikings are a team that could come up, like we've been talking about. And the Bears, they seem to, I can't believe I'm about to say this. I think the Bears are almost the team to beat right now. When you look throughout the schedule of the NFL season, which of those games do you think might be the most hyped up game that we get? Because earlier on in the season, you get those like, yes, it's exciting, we're playing a divisional rival. But when you get to the end of the season and you're playing a divisional rival, you're like, gloves are off, we're throwing down, this matters so much for playoffs. Is there a game that you're circling in division in particular, Gray?
There are two. I'm going to do that thing where you ask for one and I give you two, because I think it's worth mentioning. First of all, week 10. Yeah, week 10, it's the Packers at home against the Vikings. And the reason I've got this one pegged is because we're just about dead center of the season, and it's the week before the Packers have a bye week in week 11. So what injuries might have taken place before this recovery comes on for either team, we'll know what the quarterback situation is, at least tentatively for Minnesota by then. A lot of current questions will be answered, and new questions will develop by that time. So I feel that week 10's Vikings matchup at Lambeau going to be a good one. Then we get the bye in week 11, and the next one is week 16 at Chicago. There's every chance that will have, well, it's week 18 in against the Lions, so there's another divisional game after that, but I have a hunch that week 16 at Chicago will really be the biggest determiner who sits in the top two positions of the division, whether or not it's even the two teams playing that game. Imagine the Lions winning the division and the Vikings being in second place. It's scarily possible, and I'm sure Joel would love to support the idea that the Vikings might get something like that done.
Well, I think that Bears-Packer game, that rivalry this year is number one because of Caleb Williams versus Jordan Love. Both of those quarterbacks are trying to figure out what their legacy is going to be. Caleb Williams, obviously a great year last year. Jordan Love, Mr. Consistency, not flashy. So their legacy depends on those head-to-head. And I think that Caleb Williams versus Jordan Love, quarterback, both games in Chicago and in Green Bay, that's must-watch TV right there. That's two guys that are set to maybe escalate to a Super Bowl championship here real quick. So that rivalry, I think, is number one this coming season.
If I may, we'll just kind of very briefly look at the state of the teams. You know, I think it's fair to say that the Vikings, you know, they've got Brian Flores. They kept their DC. So it's possible the defense is decent. The Vikings are basically a quarterback away at that point. The Lions and the Packers are kind of in the same boat where they've got all their pieces. So if everything goes to plan, those are the two most dangerous teams. As far as the Bears go, if you ask me, they need to figure out what's going on with their corners because everybody just left. And hopefully the new guys are going to get the job done, but they drafted well. And if Caleb Williams eliminates incompletions, his completion percentage was abysmal, but he avoided sacks like it was his job. He looked like Fran Tarkenton out there. So every team poised to be the number one in the division with just a couple small changes.
Sir Francis to you.
The Bears closing out the season with all three divisional opponents. They go Packers, Lions, Vikings. Fortunately for them, though, they will be indoors when they play at Minnesota in, what is that, week 18? I can't keep track anymore. There's too many games. I don't know how many weeks there are. But I do know that we've got one segment left, and that means that we're going to get final thoughts coming up pretty quick here from us. We're also going to be hearing from Mike Clemens as we close out the show. This is Make the Call on the Civic Media Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Welcome back to Make the Call on Civic Media.
Welcome back one last time here on Make the Call on the Civic Media Network. Mike Clemens is going to be giving us plenty of sports news in just a moment here, but it is our final segment here with Joel and Gray, which means it's time for final thoughts. Fellas, we've talked about a lot of football. We've talked about a lot of baseball. We've talked about a lot of soccer and whatever the heck, field dimensions. Did we miss anything? Is there anything that's on your mind as we move into this weekend here? Joel, I'll start with you. What do you got on your mind here in final thoughts?
Well, it's June 13th, and I think it's officially crunch time for the start of the NFL season. I think it's been, I mean, we can still be excited about the Brewers and everything that's going on there. That they're a fun team to watch. And if you're a FIFA World Cup soccer person, good for you. Hey, I heard Mike Clemens on the Sports Report this week say in the week one game versus Minnesota, he just said that line and instantly my blood pressure just went up just a little bit. So the NFL is on the way. I'm going to go play a little cornhole this weekend. I'm going to have a little Brewers on the radio and just looking forward to enjoying a summer here in the Northwoods before the stress of another purple anxiety filled season begins for a Minnesota Viking fan.
Oh, the stress that comes with the colors you wear during football season. Yes. Yes. I'm all too familiar. Gray, what colors are you going to be wearing and are they going to be stressing you out?
It's going to be red, white, and blue, and I don't think they're going to stress me out because what I'm going to be doing is trying to get myself in a soccer-watching mood. I'm not necessarily optimistic, but that's one of my goals for the weekend. We're going to take garbage out, we're going to do laundry, and I'm going to try to watch a whole soccer game and pay attention to it. I'm not going to let myself get distracted. We're gonna try exposure therapy when it comes to the old association football. So that's where I'm going to be. If you're wondering, what's Gray doing right now? Staring at a screen, but does it have soccer on it? We'll have to talk about that next week.
Yep. I mean, hey, there's plenty of soccer to watch. They're going to be getting into the full swing of things here with the group stages. My final thought this week, guys, I am a camera operator for a Northwoods League team, and I am just hoping that it doesn't rain. This has been Make the Call on the Civic Media Network. Mike Clemens is next. Joel, thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate your time, and I hope you have a good weekend.
Great to be here. Thank you.
Gray, have a good weekend, too, and we will see you listeners later.
See you next week.
the Brewers and the Phillies. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports from American Family Field in Milwaukee, where it's the Brewers and the Phillies for a three-game weekend series. The crew has Monday night off before beginning a three-game series Tuesday night here in Milwaukee against the Cleveland Guardians. Friday night at the ballpark was one for the record books. The Brewers with a 6-0 win over Philadelphia thanks to an incredible complete 9-inning game pitched by Milwaukee's Jacob Mizorowski. He struck out 15 batters, allowing only one hit.
Miz, how do you describe this feeling?
Amazing. I mean, it's everything I've worked for. You know, all the support from my family up there. It's been the world, so it's been awesome.
The 24-year-old's mother and a friend decided to drive up from Kansas City that day and attended the game. The Miz was asked, how much did catcher William Contreras contribute to that epic performance?
Yeah, I mean, all the help from back there, he was getting calls that I needed, and, you know, we were calling off-speed in the right spots and making him trust the heater, so it was awesome.
Mizorowski had one pitch clocked at 104 miles per hour, the fastest for a starter since they started keeping those records. Teammate Christian Yelich.
I mean, it's obviously really impressive, and, you know, this year he's filled the zone up a lot and really limited the walks, and when you can prove that you're in the zone with that, then you get guys in swing mode, and it becomes a really tough at-bat, obviously. He's throwing 103.
The Brewers manager, Pat Murphy, on the Miz's performance.
Yeah, I mean, for me personally, that was as good as it gets. You know, I can't, 46 years, I only remember about three of them. So I can't tell you for sure, but it seems like in the major leagues, to pitch a game like that against an offense like that, that's that capable with all those all-stars over there and the great players they have, you know, incredible performance.
Murphy says the Miz works every day to improve.
He learned something tonight. He'll continue to learn. He's that type of kid. He wants to be great. He wants to keep becoming what he can become. You know, I think this is just a pure kid. Really is a beautiful kid.
NFL. The Packers held their mandatory minicamp this week in Green Bay. Several players still recovering from season-ending injuries last year, unable to practice this week, like defensive lineman Devontae Wyatt, right tackle Zach Tom, who had knee surgery, and even some newcomers like free agent return man Sky Moore. But Packers tight end Tucker Kraft says he'll be ready by September, week one, when the Packers play the Vikings in Minnesota.
My anticipation is, you know, they don't really want us talking about our injuries and stuff, but that with how I feel, I would say I'm going to get all the conditioning I need in camp to start week one on no pitch count.
Kraft suffered a torn ACL early November in that loss to the Carolina Panthers at Lambeau Field. I asked him if he realized how big of a void it was in the Packers locker room when he was done for the year.
There's certain things that I think I can bring to the table for this team, and at first for me it was leading with my ability, and then I had to grow into the role of being a vocal leader. And as long as that's taken over, you can't be a vocal leader if you don't practice what you preach.
The Packers have been talking all week about how to finish football games. What's Tucker Kraft's observation?
I'm not saying it's a culmination of players' failures, but we're not winning. So we just have to, you know, each man has to nut up or shut up. Do your job one play at a time. I hear a play in the huddle. I look at my assignment, my alignment, my technique. I think one to two things that might change that play in a snapshot. Here comes a snap, and you never get a single play back in the NFL. So I think you just have to have the right attitude.
Now, next week is the final OTA practice sessions in Green Bay as they wrap up the offseason program. What's the best way to spend June and July before starting training camp and the long football season? Packers receivers Christian Watson and Bo Melton have their lockers next to each other. Starting with Watson, I asked them, what's their plans this summer before training camp begins?
I don't got much for you. I just take the time to get away for a little bit. I'm training the whole time, but just relaxing for the most part.
I'm gonna be in Jersey, so I'm gonna be on that beat for sure. You gotta be on that beat. Hell yeah, yeah, yeah. That's it though. I don't know where I'm going for the trip yet though.
I saw a thing about Boardwalk. They make some serious subs there.
Oh yeah, you gonna have you a sub or two? Yeah, and especially in the Boardwalk sub pizza and glizzies. Yeah, you gotta have one.
What's a glizzy?
Oh, a hot dog.
Oh, really?
Yeah, we call that a glizz.
Oh, I didn't know.
Down the East Coast, a glizz.
Loaded up with.
Oh, yeah, you loaded up. Now you put some relish, horseradish on, put some mustard. Yeah. Oh. Yeah, Chris.
puts the Chicago dog to shame, then.
Oh, huh? Yeah, we put them Chicago dogs right the same. We do that hot doggy dog.
That's Packers wide receiver Bo Melton. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.